time is 11:46. See, I already broke my own rule. I did not have this on. I called us to order at 11:46. Just to repeat this so it is recorded, this meeting will be recorded. The audio recording will be posted online for the public to view. Next up, we have to review our minutes from May. I sent these out to y'all too. And then to approve these, we just need a motion and a second. Or if there's any revisions.
I'll move to accept the meetings minutes as presented.
Okay. Any seconds? Okay. Doctor. All right. And I will talk through some processes today for those that are new in the room. We do follow Robert's Rules of Order, so anytime we're recommending something, we have to have a motion, a second, and then a vote. Minutes, we don't. We just have a motion and a second. Of course, if there's anything we need to correct, we'll correct it and get it reposted. All right. So since this is our first meeting of the 24-25 school year, I want to go around the room to let each of you introduce yourselves to one another. For the staff members in the room, if you'll state your name, what your title is, and where you're at. And then for our parents and community representatives, your name and what organization or school you're representing. I'll start. My name is Megan Benthal. I'm the Director of Student Health Services for Hayes CISD.
Hi, I'm Alex Zavala. I am a parent to a now sixth grader at Barton Middle School and also a small business owner here in the community.
Dusty Gibbs, I'm the Assistant Director of Athletics here at ACISD.
Hi, Whitney Self, I'm an elementary PE teacher at Camino Real, and I'm the lead elementary PE teacher for the district. And this is my 20th year on the check.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Van Wilson. I am a community consultant with CATS Global Foundation, and I'm a parent of a Negley student and a Barton student.
I'm Angelica Solis. I'm the dietitian with Child Nutrition Department. this is our dietetic intern, Emily, from Texas State.
Hi,
I'm Melissa Corona. I'm the Director of Special Education for Hayes CISD and also a parent of a Hayes graduate and a sophomore at Hayes.
My name is Nicole Hartman. I'm a community pediatrician with Corridor Pediatrics. We have locations here in Kyle and also in St.
Maritza Gonzalez, Director of Guidance and Counseling in College and Career Readiness for Hayes.
Linda Ray Johnson, mental health professional with the district, been with Hayes CIC for 6 years.
Jessica Levin, I have a junior in Layman, a sixth grader in Simon, and a second grader in Hempel.
Kristen Searball, I have two daughters at Kyle Elementary, and I'm also a downtown Buda business owner at the new Cozy Corner, if anyone's heard of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm Krista Deshays. I'm a parent representative from Sunfield Elementary, and I am particularly interested in mental health and our students. If anybody ever is on a committee or needs some assistance or feedback with that.
Thank you, everyone. Jerry Skrocki is here, too. She conveniently walked out when we were introducing ourselves. I'll call her out. She's our Chief of Safety and Security. So the next thing I had on the agenda was really just kind of a 25,000-foot view of the shack and what we do. And some of our focuses for this year. So this quote here is the reason that shacks were even formed. Healthy students are better learners. You can't learn to read or do math if you aren't healthy. And there are multiple determinants of health. It's not just you're physically ill or you have strep throat for the day. It may be food insecurity. You may not have access to hygiene products. I mean, there's a multitude of things that affect overall health. So we are mandated by state law. If any of you are bored and need to read to put yourself to sleep at night, if you look up Texas Education Code 28.004, it'll tell you all about the shack and what we are required to do. There are other areas of Texas Education Code where the shack is referenced, so not everything is listed there, but the majority of it is there. We are appointed by the school board. We have a process for this in our school district, and we're here to be a voice for parents and the community and a way to share the importance of health to the district and our school board. And we also serve as a recommending body to the Board of Trustees. Sorry, I thought that light went off. We do not make policy, we just make recommendations. So what are some of our main purposes? We review all of the health-related curriculum, including the sexual health curriculum. We make recommendations on topics that are related to health. We are required to meet at least 4 times a year. We prepare an annual report for the school board. We record meetings, maintain minutes, and we have to post publicly. I'll give you guys access to this presentation as well. I'll post it where the agenda is. These two board policies specifically mention SHAC, and then the wellness plan is something that we are in charge of as a SHAC as well. And I've linked that here. I encourage you to go look at it because it's due for review this year. Some benefits is we support a whole child. We repeating myself a little bit, so I apologize. Emphasize a healthy school community. Be a credible collective voice of support. Many of you have varying backgrounds. Even if you're a representative for Negley Elementary, you may have other experience that you can bring to the table. So, and we facilitate parental involvement and utilize and make the most of our community resources and assets. Ooh, did I go too far? Nope. So our responsibilities do evolve. They are specific to current health trends that are happening within the community and sometimes state level. Also, legislation tells shacks what to do a lot, and there is an upcoming legislative session in the spring. And I don't know anything right now, but guaranteed there's going to be something filed that affects what the shack does. We do have a resource site, and I have that linked right here. It's a quick way for you guys to get to it. It's on the main Hays site. And then we also abide by our own bylaws that were created by a shack, one of our shacks, many, many moons ago. I bet Whitney was on the shack during that time. So I encourage you to go read those bylaws, and if you have any questions, please reach out. I pulled out some of the main points from the bylaws. We do allow voting and non-voting members. We have to have at least 10, but no more than 30 members. Each of us serves a 2-year term, with the exception of me and Whitney, with two consecutive term limits. Our meeting structure, we do follow Robert's Rules of Orders. And then whenever we're voting, our quorum is that we have to have 1/4 of voting membership present. We typically don't have an issue with that, but if we don't, we can't vote that day. So some of our focuses for this year, the one on top came up in the last couple months, and we're going to review that and make some recommendations today, hopefully. Wellness plan review and update, follow up on Tucker's Law implementation, that's the opioid curriculum that's now mandated, and continued focus on mental health resources and increasing our physical activity minutes, specifically at our elementary schools. So, do you guys have any questions about that? That's like a 25,000 foot view. There's lots of little nuances, but this is the main overall role and purpose.
Did you say you were going to send us these slides?
I'll post it on the SHAC website. I'll just put a link to it there so you guys can get to it. All right. Well, if you guys don't have any questions, and Jerry, I introduced you while you stepped out.
I'm sorry. One more social media or school threat.
Okay, so I sent y'all an email, I think it was on Monday, asking you to please review the weather guidelines, like a proposed weather guidelines. What I have, and I linked our current ones, and that's what I have up here now. Did everybody have a chance to just at least glance at them? Okay. I'm going to put the proposed ones up here. And Jerry, please interject wherever you want to. So essentially, we identified a gap in, these haven't been updated since January of 2019. And not that much has changed in regards to weather and air quality. We just wanted to make sure that we're following the most current things that are available out there. We also have a district approved weather app that is that on the computers yet?
Hello. My name is Jerry Sprocky. I'm the Chief of Safety and Security. So I've been working very closely with our athletics department, as well as Megan, in regards to how do we get robust information in a timely manner for all weather events, whether it's cold, it's wind, whether it's heat, it's humidity. Do we have threat of tornadoes or high winds or any of those things? Flooding, is it manifesting in a way that's going to be risky to our transportation team? Because, again, we have drivers out at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning oftentimes when we have a lot of rain. So what we did is we had a weather application that we were utilizing. It wasn't as robust as what we really wanted and needed. So what we did is we went with a new vendor this year. With that, we are going to be getting real-time notice from weather, basically equipment that will be posted on three of our different campuses. What that will be doing is giving us real-time information that is affecting our area. And what we have set it up will, once it's hot, once it's live, will actually be overlapping and giving us coverage for our entire district. So although it may be on this building, it's giving us that circular area, and we overlap them so that we get all of our campuses covered. It's twofold, right? It's not only to handle what we're doing on a daily basis for our athletics and our fine arts, our band folks who are outside on those pads and doing those things, but it's also for our littles. It's for recess. You know, do we need to adjust recess because it needs to be adjusted, to the AM because we've got very significant weather, coming in where our heat index or we've got smog advisory and those things. So I worked very closely with our athletic team. They're doing everything that they need to do with the UIL piece for practices, et cetera. We know that our games are oftentimes monitored, right? We do that under our requirements through UIL, but we wanted to make sure that we were managing that. So I worked very closely with Megan. We wanted to make sure for consistency's sake that this app, which is something that is used across the country, was specific to KCISD. In other words, our alerts are actually going to be tailored to UIL guidelines so that we're going to adopt the same type of guidelines that UIL does that are the things that we want to know for our athletes and things like that, and that's what our alerts are going to be based on. I was just telling Dusty we just got the ship notice on all of our hardware, so our maintenance and operations team will be installing those in the coming weeks. But with that, we will also, if we have mobile users, but every campus has at least two people on campus that will receive real-time notices via text messages. Again, what you'll find is at our high school levels, you're going to see more people are going to get those, right? Athletics, some of our fine arts folks. So it'll be a bigger type network. We have to pay by user for those things. And a lot of times our athletics, our fine arts, they're traveling, right? And maybe we're going to a location that doesn't have as robust of a system. So we wanted to make sure our kids were taken care of, and then, of course, our visiting schools will benefit from that. But wanted to make sure that y'all were aware that we are managing that. But the really exciting thing about this as well is we actually subscribed and we'll be getting a weather widget that will actually go on each of the individual campuses' webpage. And so it will be showing real-time data on that webpage for every single person on that campus. So you as a parent, if you go to Negley's webpage, you will see the weather that's affecting Negley based on that. So once we get our systems up and running and all of those installed, you'll also see those weather widgets on campus. So even if you don't get a text message, you're still going to be able, if I'm a coach or if I'm a teacher, we're going to do recess, you're going to be able to look at that weather widget and see what the real-time conditions are affecting your campus. So we're using that in conjunction with the guidelines that Megan's putting forward here, and then, of course, working with our athletic teams to make sure that we're managing that.
Maybe I have a couple questions. This is Krista with Sunfield. Okay, two questions. First, am I reading this correctly that it is if the heat index is 100 plus or if the actual temperature is 106 plus is considered?
It's the heat index.
Okay.
So what this does is it takes into account the humidity, the percentage of humidity.
Okay.
Which our previous weather guidelines, it did that. It just didn't get down to this level where we have actual numbers there. And then the color coding, I'm not going to take credit for this entire chart. I found it on the resource down here. It's like the Iowa Department of Health has this. Our previous ones were based off of the Missouri Department of Health. Why we don't have one for Texas, I don't know. But, Jerry and I reviewed this, and we liked that it got into the nitty-gritty of the actual numbers.
Yeah.
And then also having a consistent resource for everybody to use, because that was one of the problems that was identified. You know, my iPhone saying it's 99 while someone else's is saying it's 104, what do we do? So having this one resource, because that's what we're going to point everybody to, well, what does that say? That's what we're going to go off of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. My second question, this might be too nitpicky of a question for today, but for at-risk students, who is responsible for making that call? Are the students responsible? It seems like too much for teachers, or is this more related to like sports versus recess?
Are you talking in regards specifically to
yellow.
The air quality piece of this?
Yeah.
So I get alerts from the airnow.gov when it's like poor air quality day. Do you get them too, Jerry? I send those out to my nursing staff to say, let your campus know that this is either a day that those sensitive populations shouldn't go out, or we need to watch them if we are going to let them go out. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
That's what that looks like.
We only have so many licenses, and so we've put them in administrator roles so that we can make sure that it is getting passed down. And we wanted to make sure there were multiple people on campuses so that we could manage and make sure that there was somebody on the campus to manage the message.
That was my other question. Is that something that, so you said it's going to live on like somebody's phone, it's on the desktop, that it can be monitored if you
know,
there's a principal conference and our administrative staff?
No, it will still also be on the webpage. So it's not, that alert is just a mobile message that is the subscriber. And then say that person's off campus, that's going with them. I can't do that. That's why we have multiple folks. But then we shore up those holes because at that point, if both administrators are off campus, which is highly unlikely that we lose, right? But then we have the nurse piece. So in that event, you're going to see the nurse is going to manage that communication. But yes, and then we have to, you know, if both of our staff, our administrative staff are off, I think our campuses do a really good job of owning, you know, hey, I've got to make sure that this is okay today, et cetera. And then keep in mind, if there is something that is crucial weather event, the tornadoes that we had last year, right, that's immediately, there's a system in place. We've all got emergency radios. Those emergency radios, I send out a notice via our communication for all of my campus staff to start monitoring our emergency operations radio channel, and then I'm giving them real-time direction based on that. So, like, when we have a tornado's touchdown and they're moving towards the district, everybody was noticed, and then they were told to take immediate cover. That's when I was communicating with transportation, pulling buses off the street, hey, pull in the HEB parking lot, get the kids inside, those kind of things. So we have multiple safeguards in place.
Questions, concerns, comments. I guess if not, I want to point out again, I know Jerry mentioned this, but this is for non-UIL. This is going to be like recess time, outdoor, taking PE outside, anything that is non-UIL. So, I mean, if you guys are okay, I'd like to move forward with this approval so that we can, or recommendation, so that we could get this out to the campuses so they have the most up-to-date information. Diana Woods, second. We get to do our first vote, first meeting. All right, so all those in favor, go ahead and put your hands up. Any against? Okay, perfect. This is not some, we don't need to take this to the board, right? No, I don't think so. So this will be our recommendation. I will get the most updated information on the site, and I guess I'll work with Jerry about getting this out to our principals so they have accurate information that they're following. All right, awesome. Okay, so next up was committee formation. We are required to have two subcommittees. One of them is the physical activity subcommittee, and one is child nutrition, but we're going to pause on that one because our director of child nutrition is not here today. So physical activity, do you want to talk about it at all, Whitney?
Sure.
Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot.
So physical activity committee is charged with a very difficult task. With our rate of growth in this district, increasing physical activity minutes at the elementary level is near impossible. We did a survey at the end of last year. Consistently across the comments were they have their own instructional minutes that they have to accrue, as do we. And even our instructional minutes that we're allotted is not even close to what the TA mandate is. It's 135 minutes per week for elementary, and we're getting, on a good week, maybe 100 to 110 minutes of that. And that all just depends on the rotation. The bigger the school, the less times that they're going to PE. And every campus, I'm pretty sure, is at 900 plus this year. Sunfield started, with a projected growth that they were supposed to be probably around the 700s this year. They're put over 900 already. We all see the growth happening around, so it's going to be a committee that is finding ways to get creative. It's going to be other ways outside of the classroom. What can we do to get kids involved more in the community even, staying after school for clubs, creating, some type of campus level, walking Wednesdays where everybody in the whole campus is doing something once a week, because putting it on individual teachers is not really feasible. So it's an interesting committee. It's worth it, but we do have to come up with some really good ideas to make it work.
I have an idea, Commissioner.
Yeah.
It's just community, but I know my kids get sent home with, reading logs to do. I wonder if there would be a way to send, a physical activity log that they could fill out, obviously not mandatory, but, just to encourage them to have physical activity after school.
Potentially, that is something that the physical activity subcommittee could come up with as a recommendation to bring before the SHAC. So I know last year it was Whitney and Robin. Is anyone else interested in serving on this year? Okay, so I have Whitney, Krista, Suzanne, Melissa? All right. Well, there was someone else. Who else? Will you guys put your hands up? I have Krista, Suzanne, Whitney, Melissa. Was that it? Robin. Sorry. You just asked, and I ignored you. Sorry. Is anyone interested in child nutrition? I can certainly give your names to Mr. Stone. Okay. Yeah, and Kristen all.
Are we doing away with the mental health committee?
So let me write down these names before. Was there anyone else for child nutrition? So for the mental health committee, I think we're trying to figure out what is our purpose with that. Like, what are we doing? I don't know if Linda, Ray, or Maritza want to speak a little bit to what is already happening in counseling and our mental health services. But I think I'll let you talk.
Excuse me, I have allergies with the colors. So this year we continue to have a lot of different supports available to our students and families via the three mental health professionals that are working under the department and layering support at the campus level, but also the way that we have done a more of a wraparound of support and availability of resources to campuses has been through the intern program that we have. Our partnerships with CNS, we have about we have 9 master's levels interns from CNS who just about all of them are plugging directly to at least 2 or 3 campuses during the week. We have a couple from Texas State University, and the one that has been a little delay on getting us connected with some interns has been UT this year. We had some 2 fabulous ones last year, but this year it looks more than likely that we'll have someone ready to start till the spring. But we do have those resources supporting the campuses. We continue to have our partnership, our contract, at least through the end of December with Daybreak and Keystone Counseling, which is available. We continue to also focus and expand the availability of TCHAT Dell Medical on the campuses. I may have shared with this team before some of the data points in the past, but we are knowing not only in Central Texas, but even across Texas, that we are one of the districts that heavily uses our partnership with TCHAT and Dell Medical. As you know, we as a district do not pay a cent. It's through grants that they secure. So we have quite a few campuses. Last year, for example, just on the top of my head, about 284 unique students were serviced. Each of them received at least 9 to 10 sessions. That was like over 1,000 plus sessions throughout the year. They have the substance use disorder program as well. They offer us consultations. So a lot of our counselors are mental health counselors at the campuses. Oftentimes, I've done it myself when we were doing a wraparound of support at Green Elementary, for example, the last 2.5 months of the school year. We do a consultation, and we are able to get with a clinician and consult with them as well. So that's one of the resources that continues to grow as well. We also have a Family Success Center continuing to grow as well. You want to speak a little to that?
Parents access.
there are different ways for parents accessing services. We have various, it could be through a referral through the campus level, counselor, a teacher, there's a QR form that's available to the community as well. We actually, I pride myself in sharing that starting this last month, we were able to kick off our first mental health newsletter. Rena, a member of this team, has started to put it out, and we share it out with campuses. We share it out. We haven't done such a great job in social media, but we are starting to ramp that up as well. So that's available. And something new that's also coming to us, you may or may not know, but yesterday I was the city of Kyle as well, because the city of Kyle did approve an LCDC counselor to come and service students in our district, and they authorized or contracted with Hill Country MHCD, which is our local mental health authority. So they are the ones posting the job, we'll do the hiring, we'll do the supervising. And the beauty of it is that it won't be just one full-time position, which is a licensed chemical dependency counselor, servicing primarily the Impact Center and the three comprehensive high schools. But they are fixing on bringing also some interns, LCDC interns, and being supervised by Hill Country. And we are also in dialogue with a couple of staff from Texas State, because we're working very close with them. Just before coming to this meeting, I just got off on a Zoom meeting, because we are also been collaborating with Hays County, the Health and Human Services, a team from Texas State as well, and really just ramping up the resources when it comes to mental health and also chemical dependency prevention and intervention services. So we are, fingers crossed, we see that more resources are coming our way in that area. And that's just, I guess, to brief you some of the resources. Of course, you know, we still continue to have more needs, right? So the more resources we could have, and oftentimes what I continue finding myself into is that some of these responses, for example, this approval of the LCDC, for right now it's just a 1 year term. And so each year we kind of keep finding ourselves in an ideal world if we were able to tap on some longer term resources. This team, we may have shared in the past, Linda Ray and I, and even Stephanie Norris from Federal Programs collaborated about a year and a half ago, and we pretty much invested countless hours to put together a SAMHSA Project Aware grant proposal. We were not selected for that proposal, but one of the reasons why we were after such a grant is because it was over 5 years. It was a 5-year grant. So once you receive it, and it was a very large amount to really, you know, expand the resources and the services, because what we keep finding ourselves into is that every other semester we keep circling back and trying to find another way to continue to meet the needs and provide more resources to families.
Does that help answer your question?
Yeah. And I'd like to just add, you know, as a pediatrician in the community, I can tell you I've seen the difference the past few years that all of these efforts have made for students. And so the school districts have really become a touchstone, a place for families to go when they need to get plugged in with urgent counseling services, and even through, you know, TCHAT, with psychiatrists and whatnot. So it makes a difference. We've seen it. So thank you for everything you do.
And thank you for sharing, because it's always helpful to hear that feedback as well, because I tell you, we never turn anyone away. So one of the council members yesterday at the city of Kyle, which they have previously at a previous session approved the funding, but yesterday was more of like shared our plan, our next steps, that kind of thing, and go through that process. But their question was, well, you know, the funding is directed just to students or families that reside in the city of Kyle. How do you address the needs for students that reside in Buda and other areas? And so our sharing there was similar to what I've shared with you. I mean, we have armed ourselves with a lot of different resources and different clinicians in the area that are usually ready to support us. For me, testimonial, of course, was just the wealth of support that came our way when we were addressing the needs of Tom Green Elementary. I have, you know, so many colleagues across Central Texas from various school districts, Health and Human Services, Hill Country. I mean, we have individuals from the Houston area with the animal assisted therapy. I mean, it was just awesome. It was just awesome, the support that just came our way. And I feel blessed to be in this district and to have so many people who's willing to help.
Do you feel that you have sufficient resources for non-English speaking parents?
It's always a challenge, but we do strive to make that available, at least when it comes to Spanish speaking. Linda Ray, myself, and another of the mentor professionals are bilingual. But yes, usually it could be a challenge. Take, for example, when we continue for at least 2 weeks providing in the evenings additional support, Green Elementary, for families and parents, the ones in that community that continue coming in were Spanish speaking. And it was tough trying to find. We did find some, but it's always a challenge. So, yes. And I mean, another example is the current interns, for example. All the 10 or 11 interns that we have, only one is bilingual. And so we kind of, Linda Ray makes miracle with her placement to try to make magic happen and connecting her directly to bilingual parents.
That's good. We have contact with English speakers at our food pantry distribution at our church. And I, as the social services coordinator, do information referral, and many of them have children in the school district. And you know, during times of stress and anxiety, they I really want to have a good place to refer, and I'm glad that exists in the school district. And so, in your recommendation, would be for them to talk to the counselor of the campus where they are.
Yes, that's one of the ways. Otherwise, you could definitely refer them to us. We even HCISD website, you go to guidance and counseling, and you'll find both of our contacts there as well.
Cool. Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So the council that was adopted by the city council. My understanding, that I don't know if this has changed since I asked, are they going to be housed at Kyle Elementary?
They're going to be housed in that separate, what they call the rock house, right outside. And I know, believe me, I know at one point the community, when they heard Kyle, they of course, you know, all sort of red flags go up, right? Will they be in the campus? Will they have to check in? No, it's, and it's only mainly for the office space type of planning purposes. The goal with this position and other resources that come along with it will be that they will go directly to the campuses, Impact Center or Johnson Lehman Business School.
I wasn't really concerned with campus access so much as what you had mentioned before, that if it is something that is approved by the city of Kyle and the individuals housed there, they're going to be helping students within. How do we address that? Like you said about, you know, we have students in UDA or UN or elsewhere, there are so many spaces and students, but are there going to be able to receive resources from
Correct, yes. So yes, we won't leave any person that, you know, need just because of where they live. For starters, yes, of course, it's primarily, you know, targeted and funded by the City of Kyle. There are other conversations going on. Yeah, I think even within the Buda or San Marcos Chambers of Commerce as well. And like I mentioned to you, I'm part of a coalition as well with Hays County Health and Human Services, Texas State. And what they're trying to do is really just bring everybody, you know, at least on a monthly basis to the table and really come with more of a robust plan that really makes, allow the services available to everyone, you know, in the area as well. So yes, if any students are in need, it's not that they're going to focus specifically on just some students, depending on where they live, because they will, once again, we anticipate, yes, the city is kind of sort of like opening the door for access through this position, but Hill Country has other funding and have already interns in place that will be willing and they are able to place within our district to provide those resources as well and services.
So, full confession, I was in the city council member of Kyle, but I
just am saying on the record, I think we've moved into open discussion. It's fine. It's fine. Just want to note that on the recording. So I didn't mean to, like, interject on any of that. But does anyone have any things for open discussion? I will tell you, if you guys have any topics that you want to see at these chat meetings, please let me know. I'll do my best to try and accommodate them. Just shoot me an email, but give me time as well. Don't do it the day before.
It was, they can't really do in there, but everyone was asking about increased recess time.
Yes.
Like either adding an additional recess, having a morning and an afternoon, instead of 20 minutes being 30 minutes. I know at Camino Real, our recess is 30 minutes, so I don't know if that's a district thing or just a Camino thing, but our kids get it for 30 minutes when they get it because of weather.
I believe Carpenter Hill is 20 minutes.
Our pre-Ks get to everyone else's one, but they are getting the 30 minutes for this year.
Okay.
But that was the main thing across it was they don't have the instructional time. They want them to go to PE more often, but that's impossible at the moment unless we build another gym and hire another PE teacher or build schools faster than people can build apartments and houses. I think it was a positive response. They all want more physical activity. No one was like, no, like more math, more reading. They want the kids moving because they know that when they come back to their classroom, they're going to focus, they're going to learn better. They know, they understand the science behind it and how it's actually better for them. Our older grade teachers are just not fans of the brain breaks, and it's hard to get fifth graders to do a go noodle or anything, but you know, we can compile, that would be another thing we can do is compile resources for academic brain breaks that exist out there. We just have to go hunt them down and find them. Where they're still doing a math lesson, but there's movement involved in that lesson.
Yeah.
So there's strategic ways that they can put it into the classroom without saying, okay, everybody stop and stand up and push play on video. So it's kind of getting the buy-in on teachers on that side of it.
Well, and you get to use, it's like double dipping the minutes because they account for instructional minutes and physical activity minutes at the same time. So it's just coming up with creative ways to do that. All right. Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
This is Krista. Megan, I'm curious from you what your number one concern is going into like cold and flu season this year. Is it monkeypox? Is it COVID? Is it strep throat? Is there anything that should be on our radar?
Well, I haven't had a conversation with you yet, but I'm going to put Dr. Hartman on the spot as a community pediatrician.
Happy to step in. So right now, you know, we've seen...
Oh, did it die?
I'm not sure if it was something I did or... Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, again, right now what we're seeing is COVID really, since early July, we've kind of seen a spike in that. Starting to see a few flu cases, so I'm curious to see, it might be a heavy flu season. I think it's a big thing. There are some questions, you know, about bird flu and other specific strains of the flu maybe being big this year, but we just haven't seen that yet. But there's nothing else, you know, strange or unusual. It's kind of our new normal.
So I guess for me to answer your question, my concerns are going to be what her concerns are. So, and you know, we rely on one another. We have the health department as a resource too to kind of keep us clued in to what the trends are. So, yeah.
And I'm assuming that COVID going around now is it just as dangerous to sensitive populations? Because I don't know that everybody's getting a fever, which keeps
is the only thing that keeps kids home.
Yeah, I mean, the CDC guidelines changed over the past year, basically saying we're treating COVID from an infection control standpoint like any other viral illness, right? So, like, you would treat the flu or a febrile, you know, upper respiratory infection. In general, I would say it seems like most people are getting less sick with COVID. We do still see quite a few fevers and coughs, but we're seeing, you know, fewer kids in particular get hospitalized or have long COVID complications than we were, you know, a couple of years ago. For adults, you know, high-risk populations, of course, they're always going to be higher risk, right, by definition. But the same thing holds true for the flu. In general, I'd say a lot of people are not even testing for COVID at this point, and they're just kind of calling it a virus, which, you know, again, for a standard patient, that's okay. You know, but high-risk patients, we're certainly encouraging more testing and being thoughtful with their care.
Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
Angelica with the Child Nutrition Department. So we welcome and encourage anyone who is interested in the Child Nutrition Committee. We have some updates. I know we talked about the Green Bronx machine at the last meeting. It was approved. We're starting to get in the supplies, the curriculum. We are planning to start at Fuentes Elementary and Tobias. So that is a STEM-based curriculum. It's encouraged to add to the curriculum, not take it away. It'll be an 8-week cycle for school. So sparking interest into the other elementaries who would like to take on this project. I will be involved. Shelf Rufus will be involved, as well as Thomas. And then we also got a grant from Dairy Max. So we're going to start taking initiative to increase our breakfast program, encourage students to, TBD, but yes, our breakfast program, we're going to use those grant funds to support students and to incorporate recipes that are more popular items, I guess, that students will enjoy. So keep a look out for the menu on those. And, of course, follow us on social media because we are starting to do more events. Our roving chef is back. For those of you who don't know, it is a culinary class where they learn cooking skills. We tour the kitchen. We have nutrition education focus. That is starting to, we've had a couple events at our elementaries, follow us on social media so that you can stay up to date on that as well. Thank you.
Okay, if nobody has anything else, I'm not going to hold us hostage here. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn us at 12:40.